This week on the show, we bring Celtics fans back down to planet Earth. The Red Sox have the best player in baseball. And Lebowitz, where's Tom Brady?
He's not at OTAs, we know that much.
All right, we'll discuss all that and more. Calling It starts right now. Welcome to the show. This is the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS Media. Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz with you, as we are every Monday. It's going to be kind of a timeless episode. We got some big picture stuff to talk about, not just from the past week, but, you know, overall, what's going on in the Boston sports world. It's getting a little wild again.
It is. It's, you know, it's beginning of the summer, kind of, end of spring, but things are heating up. There's a lot of storylines, a lot of stuff to talk about.
Let's start with the Boston Celtics. They, as we record this, have a 2-1 lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're recording on Monday, so game four in Cleveland is Monday night. And obviously a lot can swing based on the way this game goes. It's a completely different series, 3-1 coming back to Boston, then tied up, and then you have a best of three. So we're not going to talk too much about what's ahead because we don't want to date the show. But real quick, Lebowitz, game three, they get blown out. Are you surprised?
No, you know what? I was curious to see how the Cavaliers would respond. They were going back home. Were they going to roll over? Was this really the end of a LeBron James-dominated Eastern Conference? Or were they going to go down with a fight and eventually make it to the NBA Finals? I wasn't surprised, because you can't be surprised when you're talking about LeBron James. I was a little disheartened with the way the Celtics played. I felt like the effort could have been a little bit better. The communication could have been better. But surprised? No, definitely not.
Yeah, you kind of knew there was going to be one of those games this series. I didn't think it would be that bad. But you knew there was going to be one game where they trailed the majority of the game by double digits. And the Celtics defenders, the green teamers, they are saying, oh, well, you know, they got down early and Brad didn't want to show his hand, so he just kind of quit, or he wanted to rest everybody. So once they got down, you know, there wasn't a push. And I'm not okay with laying down in a playoff game. But if that's the reasoning, fine. If that's the maybe it could have been, you know, a 10 to 12 point game instead of a 20 point game. What ended up being, like 24? It got ugly by the end.
It was 30, I think.
Oh, you're right.
116.
Yeah, they really ran it up. As long as that's the one game you have where you kind of check out. Not that Monday night is a must win for the Celtics, and because they still have home court advantage.
They took care
of business at home in games one and two, and they still have home court advantage, and that's what leaves me confident, even if they do lose tonight. So let's do this before we move on to the real meat of the Celtics conversation I want to have. Here's what we're gonna do. If you're listening to this after the game, if the Celtics won, keep it right here. If the Celtics lost, fast forward 2 minutes.
And choose your adventure.
Right, exactly. To choose your adventure. So fast forward a minute now. If the Celtics lost, Lebowitz, give me 30 seconds on your take if they win tonight.
If they win, the series is pretty much locked up. You have two more games at home. They seem to be a confident team that's ready to prove people wrong. They're going to win. They're going to win the series, and then they're going to get crushed in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I don't know about getting crushed in the Finals. If they win tonight, I think they take game five. I think then the Cavs really do sit down. If they do win tonight, I think it's close. I don't think it's a blowout like game one or two. But I know that Golden State won by, 40 last night? 41?
41.
But it's all about, I've said it time and time again, it's all about the best player. And if you can beat LeBron, you can beat any player in the NBA. All right, so for those of you who fast-forwarded now, unfortunately, and now if they won, you can skip ahead just a minute because we have more Celtics talk after this. But let's say Celtics lost. Series is tied at two.
This is a must-win for them. A huge swing. You go up 2-0, you have all the momentum in the world, and LeBron James brings it back to his court, and he whoops you. Even if it's close, it's a big win, and once LeBron James gets going, he's probably not going to stop. Series is pretty much over. They lose tonight.
If at the beginning of this series, excuse me, if at the beginning of this series I told you they were going to be tied at two heading to game five, you'd feel pretty good. I know I would have felt good.
Yeah.
And that's where they are. Now, they would have lost the last two games, which is obviously disheartening, but I don't think a loss tonight is the end of the series. Like you said, it makes game five a must win, and you can still win out at home. As long as they take business on home court, they're okay. But I don't think it's over if they lose tonight. That being said, if they get embarrassed, then, yeah, just pack it in.
Yeah, I think tonight is a must-win. That's where you and I differ. The game five, obviously.
For the Celtics tonight,
for the Celtics, it's
they
just... Don't,
they need to win. Here's my thing about being the higher seed. As long as your home games left is equal to or more than the games you need to win, you're in good shape.
Or at least there's a possibility. Yeah, you're not done. You're not completely done
right.
for.
They still have two home games left. They need to win two games. As long as that map stays like that, I'm okay.
Okay, and I get where you're coming from. But again, we're dealing with LeBron James, and if he wins two games in a row, and the Cavaliers, not just LeBron, because he went off in game two as well. If the Cavaliers start looking all right and they're playing well as a team like they did in game three, and they do that in game four, bad news for the Celtics. I think their season is pretty much over.
I trust Brad to make the adjustments. I think it's competitive tonight. I'm not necessarily locking in a Celtics win, but it's not going to be. It will be watchable. Game three was not watchable.
Yeah.
All right, let's transition into the Celtics offseason, and that's kind of been the fun part about this Celtics postseason run, is that people are more interested in the offseason, right? Danny Ainge kind of saying, screw you, we can contend and rebuild at the same time, and that's what the Celtics are doing. Now, there is a contingent of the Celtics fan base that looks at the team that's out there right now and says, this is the team. This team's going to win a title, you know, maybe minor tweak here or there, but... Bring back Terry, bring back Marcus Smart, and just this, you draft somebody with the 23rd pick, I think it is, or whatever in the draft, and that's you're rolling with them and you can win a title. And then you say, well, what about Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving? And these lunatics want to trade Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving because they say you can win without them. No, wrong, incorrect. Those are your two best players. Part of the reason this run is so spectacular is because they've done it without an overpowering talent. Here's what I have to say to these people who say, you know, trade Kyrie or Hayward or both and trade them both for Davis, and that's one conversation, and we'll get to why you can't do that in a bit, bring in a superstar. But the ones who say trade them for picks or trade them to free up the cap to re-sign Rozier and Smart, imagine if Gordon Hayward was still in Utah right now and Kyrie was still in Cleveland right now, or just whatever. They weren't on the Celtics, and there was a possibility that the Celtics could add them next year without giving anything up, without spending any money, without trading any assets. If you took this Celtics team and said they are going to add Gordon Hayward next year from free agency, the Celtics fanboys would be all over it.
Yeah.
And how is that any different than what we have going on right now?
Well, it's because it depends on who you're trading him for. I'm not for trading for both of them, but something I could potentially get around, trade one of them. One of them and a pick and Al Horford. Boom, you get rid of a max contract, you get rid of a star player who is a huge asset, and you get rid of a potential top three pick. And knowing Sacramento, probably going to be a top three, top five pick next year.
Well, you know they're going to blow the pick this year.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously, as they always do. I'd be all ears to getting an Anthony Davis type. Trading both those guys, I don't know. And one thing we discussed before the show is how would this affect Danny Ainge's reputation among the rest of the league, free agents and owners and everyone. Again, you take that Isaiah Thomas, you trade him, a guy who, as you said, a lot of people think was one of the best players last year. You bring in Kyrie, and then you trade him. That's heartless.
And the free agents, too. You know, you're going to have guys that maybe not next year, but if you have to go out and sign a big name in 5 years and Danny's still the GM, which I would assume he will be in 5 years, what does it look like when you go to free agent and say, we want to bring you to Boston, we want to make you a part of the franchise, just like they did for Gordon Hayward, just like they did for Al Horford, just like they did for Kevin Durant? Isn't that guy going to look back across the table and say, how do I know in a year you're not going to ship me off to Sacramento or Milwaukee or, you know, somewhere I don't want to be? You know, how do I know you're not going to ship me off to Orlando? If I sign to play in Boston, I want to play in Boston. If you go, you sign Gordon Hayward, you make this huge, big ordeal about Gordon Hayward becoming the face of this franchise and Kyrie becoming the face of this franchise, and then you trade them, nobody's going to want to sign a contract with you. And look, it is a business, and players do understand that to an extent, but that would be really pushing it.
But what teams are built, with the exception of maybe the Rockets, not even the Rockets, teams are built through trades, not through signing people. And trades and drafting. That's how the Celtics have gotten to where they've gotten to.
The last three finals winners, I think you could argue, were all built off of a signing.
Okay, well, the Golden State, that was a weak move by KD.
Right, but no, but they signed him.
That is true. But
they have signed LeBron.
But why did KD go to the Warriors? One, KD is unlike any other player. No one's people are trading for KD. They're not trading KD unless he's miserable where he's at. And he also went to a team that was the best in the NBA. And obviously he wanted to be on the Golden State Warriors. LeBron, he was drafted there. There was sentimental value. I think those two are exceptions to the rules. By and large, drafting. The Spurs, drafting. Golden State, that core, through drafting. Cleveland, they originally drafted LeBron James. And the Celtics, they've drafted who they have. The Rockets, trades. That's what it is. Trades and drafting. No one decides where they really want to go unless you're a role player. Star players, you get through trading. I don't think it would be all that bad for them in free agency, because free agency is not that big of a deal, again, unless you're a role player or a mid-level starter.
How are you going to accumulate those draft picks if you don't have – I mean, those are the guys you trade for draft, and we're just kind of – you know, it's car before, before the horse, chicken before the egg, but
yeah.
I just don't think you will have any success signing free agents down the road. Anybody, and even those role players.
How did they get Kevin Garnett?
Trade.
How did they get Ray Allen?
Trade.
There you go. And those were traded, and you're talking about – and how they get Paul Pierce? Draft. They traded those guys for more draft picks. They got more assets, which got them more. That got them Kyrie Irving, and
so. But you're talking about,
and then they signed Gordon Hayward. That's the one exception.
You're talking about them trading four superstars, but this would be trading them away. This is the opposite, and this is another kind of eternal argument in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
You'd rather have the horse than the ponies. I don't want to trade Gordon Hayward away for a bunch of ponies. The famous Felger and Maz argument. I want the Clydesdale.
Yes,
I didn't think of the name of the horse.
And I agree with that. And that's why if you're going to execute that trade, you're not going to trade Gordon Hayward for a bunch of role players. They got a bunch of role players. They got a bunch of.
Well, then what are you trading him for?
Anthony Davis. You're trading for another star. You're getting rid of one or two guys you have who are major contributors on this year's team, plus a draft pick or two, and you're getting one of the best players in the NBA.
Outside of Anthony Davis, is there anybody else that enters into that conversation?
No, I don't want Kawhi Leonard. Anthony Davis is really the only person that I'd be willing to trade for, and I don't even think they're willing to give him up. So it's a hypothetical.
We're up against it, but I do. You brought up something. I had this conversation with a buddy of mine yesterday. Does anybody, you know, of the realistic trade market? We're not counting LeBron. We're not counting Durant. Let's not count Anthony Davis for the sake of argument here.
Okay.
I am counting Kawhi Leonard. Does anybody in the NBA have more trade value than Terry Rozier?
More trade value than Terry Rozier?
Not saying he's a better player. But does Kawhi Leonard really – who's more valuable in the trade, Kawhi Leonard or Terry Rozier?
Oh, Kawhi. I think.
Are you sure? Because look at – the NBA is all about what have you done for me lately.
Mm-hmm.
What has Terry Rozier done in the last 3 months? What has Kawhi Leonard done in the last 3 months? Kawhi Leonard's ceiling, obviously he's the second or third best player in the league, but it sounds like he's got a chronic injury issue, something that's never really going to go away, and you have to give up so much to get him. How's it look if you trade three draft picks for Brandon Roy?
How much would you have gotten for Isaiah Thomas last year before the hip stuff happened? Because I don't think his value was all that high last year. And that was a guy who was one of the top scorers in the NBA.
Look, they traded him in the eighth pick for Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, he was a throw-in, though. Like, realistically, the centerpiece of that trade was...
Well, Kyrie Irving's not worth the eighth pick. So Isaiah Thomas's value has to be something.
Yeah, but they're trying to get rid of him. That was an extenuating circumstance in which Kyrie wanted out and Cleveland needed to part with him. Might as well bring in a decent point guard, but the reality is they got the Nets pick. And the Nets pick they did not know was an eighth overall pick at the time.
You knew the Nets were going to be better, I think. They had to have known that. If not, they're
I think they assumed top five.
I'm not saying Terry Rozier is a better player than Kawhi Leonard. I just think right now there is nobody in the NBA whose trade value is higher than Terry Rozier. So, ship him out this offseason. I think go get what you can get.
I honestly think Smart, you're keeping Kyrie. Again, this adds to the conversation. You got two point guards, Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier. What does that say about Kyrie Irving? Is he expendable? One of those three is going to be gone. And it's between Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier. I think Smart's more valuable, personally.
I think Smart... See, here's the thing. Smart is more valuable... We're going way over on the segments. This is the last point. Smart is more valuable to the Celtics because...
Exactly.
You have to have the rest of the pieces in place for Marcus Smart to work on your roster. Terry Rozier, you can build around. You can't build around Marcus Smart. But the Celtics already have the pieces there, so having that defensive stopper is important. All right, we got a lot else we got to talk about, including a Boston athlete who's not going anywhere, we hope, for a long time, because he is really just on some kind of tear. Who are we talking about? We'll touch on that after this. And listen to Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
You catch that J.D. Martinez home run yesterday?
I did.
I mean, there were two, but you know which one I'm talking
about. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. He smoked that ball.
He's fun to watch. He is a lot of fun to watch. That crowd, why would you give him that contract? They're not speaking. They're not speaking right now.
I was wrong on that one. Although, look, they waited and waited, and instead of paying, they ended up paying like half of what Boris was asking. So
it's probably the best move Dombrowski's made since he's been in the Red Sox front office. Although we do have to wait.
It's another no-brainer, though. It's another no-brainer. You went out and you signed the best free agent.
No, but they waited, and you did have to play coy in a certain way.
But does it make up for, and this is not Dombrowski, I'm just saying the Red Sox in general, and we know their history with free agents in the last 15 years. Does it make up for Julio Lugo, Carl Crawford, Pablo Sandoval,
Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, you could argue.
Hanley's been good.
He's been good enough.
His first year he struggled. He's turned it around since.
Yeah, yeah. No, it doesn't make up for those, though.
No. it's a small notch. But the real story is the guy that J.D. Martinez is tied for the league lead in home runs. Remember, this is a team that didn't hit home runs last year. They have the two guys atop the home run leaderboard at 15 apiece as we record this on Monday. How about that? This will be relevant until Tuesday because the Red Sox don't play tonight.
Nice.
Long way of saying I want to talk about Mookie Betts because he leads the league in, I don't have the list in front of me. You heard me read them off before we started recording.
It's like every category.
It's like every category but triples.
In
he's
RBI.
Got to get more triples.
RBI,
in
RBIs, he's but like 10.
He's a leadoff hitter, and he leads runs by what, like 10, 12?
He's 10 more runs scored than the next guy, over 100 points better on the OPS, like 80 points better on slugging percent. It's ridiculous.
So there's a clear argument to be made that Mookie Betts is the best, at least, you know, offensive, the best position player in baseball. It's tough if you want to compare him to Scherzer or Kershaw. And that's another discussion, and we're not going to have that discussion today. But, I mean, in terms of the best position player, I'm so used to Boston fans. How many times did we hear last year that Isaiah Thomas was like the second best player in the NBA behind LeBron? He was the best point guard in the league, a league that has Russell Westbrook and Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry. No, Isaiah's the best point guard in the league.
I thought top five was ridiculous, but there were some people who were like, yeah, he's top three.
We've heard that as good as Chris Sale is, he is not the best pitcher in baseball. He is not the second best pitcher in baseball. If you want to start to argue at number three, I think that's a perfectly fair argument. Starting pitcher.
Yes.
But he's not one of the two best starting pitchers in baseball, despite what people in the city will tell you. I mean, if Scherzer, that's their couple name, Kurzer. If you want to argue which one of them is one and two, you know, you can go back and forth with that with all the analytics or whatever. But both guys, I think, are clearly better than Sale. We had people telling us Dion Lewis was the best running back in football, and it's totally fine that Boston fans love their players. That's what makes the city so special. But they might be right this time too.
With Mookie Betts.
Yeah, look, Mike Trout's outstanding. Bryce Harper having a bit of a down year, but a great player. I mean, I don't think it's a question that Mookie Betts is the best player in the America. Well, there's Trout, but is there a question anymore? Is there even an argument?
Well, I think you look at talent, like Trout's unbelievable.
Numbers wise, Betts is the best to this point.
He is.
Right? He's a runaway for the MVP if the numbers stay like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big if.
But even if you look at just in general, just whole body of work, 25 years old, turned 26. He's leading the league in most major categories. He's a 5-2 player, extremely well-rounded. He's turning into a top 3 to top 5 player, like definitely in that argument. He still needs to prove more to me personally to give me the nod to say, all right, arguably best player in baseball.
What do you want him to do? He's a leadoff hitter that's leading the league in home runs.
Just Like, do it over a longer stretch.
Okay, and that's fair. I kind of feel the same way too, but I mean, there's no argument he's been the best player in baseball this season to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there.
And I mean, you can, and you were, before we came on, talking about J.D. Martinez. Martinez has been great, but I mean, that's just kind of power hitting. You put in what Mookie does. J.D. Martinez isn't legging out infield singles. He's not doing what Mookie does in the field.
And it hasn't been as consistent as Mookie.
Right. Mookie, like J.D. Martinez, he was hitting 200 for the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, he was slow.
It took him a bit to get into it, which is fine. But it took him a bit to get into it. Mookie's been doing this since game one.
Yeah, he's been off the charts lately. And he's definitely getting more respect. He had a down year last year. People forget that. And down year for Mookie Betts last year, he was like 28 home runs.
It's tough to tell when a 24-year-old has a down year because there's such a small sample size.
Yeah.
That's the thing. People were hesitant to – I was hesitant to call it a down year. I thought maybe that's just who this guy is because we haven't seen that much. If a guy who's 30 has a down year, you know, because you can look at five or six previous seasons. We didn't have that sample size with Mookie. Now we do.
Yeah, and I think so. But again, we're only a month and a half through the season, or 2 months, close to 2 months through the season. I still need to see more. I need to see where he levels off at. I think regardless, he is a top five player in the MLB right now.
Yep.
But you got that guy in Mike Trout who's been a lot better for a lot longer. I'm not going to remove him from that throne. And I don't think most people will because he's just – even with the numbers – lower than Betts, people think he's hitting the best this season. They're not giving Betts the respect he deserves, and that's where I agree with you. Where's his ceiling? It's massive.
His ceiling has to be the best player in baseball.
Absolutely.
Right? He has the potential because we've seen it. If he does this over the course of a full season, which is unlikely, but it's not out of the question, then it's clear he's the best player in baseball.
He'll break records if he does this over the course of this entire season.
What's he hitting, 365 as we record this on Monday? Something like that.
I think it might be close.
It might be higher. Him or Martinez, one of them's hitting 365. But, you know, a rare positive Red Sox segment for us, which means Lebowitz. I think it's time to play a little what did the Red Sox do stupid, which purposely has bad grammar because the Red Sox have been doing stupid things this year. Obviously, they're not immune to it. Let's start with Mookie Betts. Why did they take Mookie Betts to arbitration? Why didn't they? And I know it was the offseason before this happened, but why didn't they pay the guy?
He's getting $10 million this season for arbitration.
What's he going to get when he hits the open market?
I mean,
he's
going to
get $10 million a week.
He'll get. It'll be 10 years, at least $350 million.
He'll be the highest paid player in baseball when he hits the open market.
Harper.
I
think Harper's going to get more.
No, because he'll be the year after Betts. He'll be the year before Betts, pardon me.
Yeah, he will. He could very well. I mean, yeah, especially since Harper's going out before him. I think Harper's going to be a guy who's I think he might end up being paid more than a guy like Betts. But, yeah, he's going to get $400 million, $400 million deal. And he'll deserve it. He'll deserve it. He's one of the best players in baseball. I don't think the arbitration thing is going to affect that at all, though.
You don't think that ticks him off a little bit?
A little bit, but that's the part of the game. That's the business of baseball. And every team does that. There's a reason why Mike Trout and Bryce Harper aren't signing extensions this year. They were taking arbitration, too.
I mean, not to go cross-sport because it's different, but remember the Patriots did this with Malcolm Butler, and we said it wasn't a big deal. Now Malcolm Butler's in Tennessee.
Yeah, and they try to get rid of him. And Malcolm Butler, again, apples and oranges.
If Alex Cora benches Mookie Betts in the World Series, I think we run him out of town.
But there's a difference because, I mean, Bill Belichick, the way he runs a team is different.
That's
than,
true, and there is a salary cap in football, so it is apples and oranges. But why play with the guy if he's the best player in baseball? Why screw with him?
Because I think it's a part of the business. Why, if you have two more years of giving the guy a third of what he'll make after that 2 years, why wouldn't you take advantage of that? And I think Betts knows that, and I think he'll want to stay. I think he likes playing in Boston. That's what it seems like. And I think the Red Sox will pay him once he does hit free agency. The problem is you don't only have him to look after. You have Chris Sale,
yep,
and you have Xander Bogaerts.
I mean, I'll pass on Bogaerts. I'm fine with them making Mookie Betts the highest paid player in baseball if it means Xander Bogaerts doesn't come back. Like, I'll take that.
Benintendi or Bogaerts? Who do you want?
Benintendi.
Okay.
Benintendi's kind of a down year. Again, I'm talking about a down year for, what, 24, 25-year-old, but he's shown he can't hit lefty pitching.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. And Betts has been a little bit better. there's a lot that's going to go into it. And the Red Sox have – they have kind of a similar problem than the Celtics in the sense that they have a lot of
they
young guys.
They have too many guys to pay.
And, yeah, who's going to get the money that they deserve and who's going to have to seek in free agency? I think it also comes down to who the agents are. I think Bogarts has
Bogarts
– so he's gone.
I feel like Bogarts is gone. I think that's a foregone conclusion. Benintendi will see – I think they give Betts a blank check. I think that's what you have to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. A guy like that doesn't come around very often.
One more thing, one more stupid thing the Red Sox did, and this happened on Tuesday. Like, everything happens Monday night or Tuesday, so we rarely get a chance to touch on it. But Carson Smith has been, like, the only good Red Sox reliever this year. I know Joe Kelly's been decent, but as much as the bullpen struggled, Carson Smith has been good. We may not see him again this year. He threw his glove out of anger. He will not now be out, sounds like, for the season. He's a guy who has a history of injuries. Tyler Thornburg continues to, like, maybe exist. The Loch Ness Monster of the Red Sox bullpen. But between Carson Smith throwing his glove, what's his name? Swihart. I don't know his name because he never plays. Swihart demanding a trade. The woe is me Red Sox are starting to come back again a little bit, which is very upsetting because this team was like Mookie Betts, super easy to root for this year. JD Martinez, super easy to root for. And you have a guy who's hitting 150 demanding a trade, like Mike Karp. Remember when Mike Karp demanded a trade off of the worst? He was the worst player on the worst team in baseball.
Yep.
And he thought he could get traded. You have Swihart demanding a trade, which is asinine. You have Carson Smith hurting himself, throwing his glove. Come on, grow up.
And then blaming Alex Cora.
Right, and then blaming Alex Cora when Cora, like, I totally side with Cora on that.
Yeah, I thought
if your arm is hurting, tell the manager, don't throw.
And there was 159 relievers who had pitched more than Carson Smith at that point.
23 innings in the last 3 years. His arm should not be tired.
No, you're right.
The woe is me Red Sox starting to come back a little bit. It's frustrating.
You're always going to have those guys, though. And I think with Blake Swihart, yeah, he should have been traded years ago. I agree with him. He should
be traded in the spring instead of Devin Marrero. They could use Devin Marrero right
now. If he
was
traded 2 years ago, you would have gotten a lot more than what you're going to get now. Carson Smith, awful thing to do. I just think it's a really bad look.
Idiot.
Really stupid. You have a tantrum, then you blame your manager for having a tantrum. Awful. I don't think that reflects on Cora or Dombrowski. I just think that's two divas playing on the Red Sox.
I think the Smith thing in a bigger picture reflects on Dombrowski because here we go again. Dave Dombrowski team set up to make a deep run, doesn't have a bullpen.
Yeah.
So, and he counted on Carson Smith, but you can't count on Carson Smith, can't count on Tyler Thornburg, can't count on any of them. Somebody we thought we could count on, disappointing us a little bit on this Monday. Who are we talking about? We'll get to that after this.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Sounds of summer. Country music, and I know this is a controversial topic. People get all mad when people tweet, oh, it's country music with the windows down season, but it is. Deal with it. Country music is music. You don't have to like it, but it's good. No, you're not a big country guy?
Not a big country guy at all, no.
But are you one of these people like, oh, if you listen to country, you're like unintelligent?
No, blah, blah, blah. No.
You don't disparage people for their music.
No,
choice.
A lot of intelligent people have bad taste.
Look, I was taught from a young age, you don't yuck somebody else's yum. I can't stand electro music, house music. I'm not going to crap on somebody.
No. If you enjoy electronic music, you are dumb. I'll be on that.
Look, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. All I'm saying is, if you pay $150 to go to a concert that is really just somebody pushing buttons on a computer, I think you could spend your money a little bit better. give me a guitar, a bass guitar, a drum set, and a vocalist. That's music to me. That's music. You don't get that much anymore.
You sound like an old man.
Everything's done on computers. And it's upset. Okay.
No wonder you're pursuing radio.
Right? Dying industry over here. Says the guy who actually has the job in radio.
Yeah, no, yeah, I shouldn't.
And not only radio, AM radio, yes. If I may add.
Yeah, the average listenership age is about 74.
Those who broadcast from a glass studio should not throw stones. The point I was getting to is it is this time of year that the windows on the car go down, the country music gets turned up, and you normally hear about Tom Brady showing up to OTAs. Not this year. Tom Brady skipping the organized team activities. Again, it is optional. As far as we know, this is not a holdout. He plans on showing up for training camp. This is just him wanting to spend time with his family. But I'm still nervous because what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady? Where is this legacy that's been built in the last 3 or 4 years come from?
He doesn't care about anything but football.
Right. What was the quote, remember, in the Tom versus Time documentary, that first quote that got us all hot and bothered? What are you sacrificing to be the best? Because I'm sacrificing my entire life. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to beat me. Well, it's not the words of somebody who's going to hang out on a beach the first time the team gets together.
He's putting a lot of pressure on himself by doing what he's doing right now. And given we don't know how hard he's working in this offseason. He's by himself. It's him and Guerrero. And he's probably working out. He's probably watching film. But if he comes out in the start of the season, and he's done this before, but if he comes out at the start of this season specifically, and he isn't the same Tom Brady we're used to seeing, we'll point right back to this.
Oh, I think you have to, especially because this year, Julian Edelman's not new, but he's coming off of, he hasn't played with him in a year. And I know they'll go to the lodge in Montana and do their workout up there, and that's fine, but you need to be in pads, in a controlled environment with your whole team. He needs to get back on the same page with Edelman. Kenny Britt supposedly may play a role on this team. I'd like to see him get some time with Kenny Britt, get some time with Jordan Matthews, get some time with Braxton Berrios, get some time with Dwayne Allen, because he really didn't throw to Dwayne Allen last year. If Dwayne Allen makes this team, the whole thing with Brady is you see him make these throws, and it looks like telekinesis because he spends all this time with his receivers that they're just, it's second nature to them. And a huge part of that is these OTA kind of practices that he's not at. And it's not the first time Tom Brady skipped optional team activities, but it's the first time in a couple years. The last time he did was the year before they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. Remember Brady before they drafted Garoppolo? He was totally into the celebrity of it. He was totally into the dating Giselle and having, and that's fine that he was into his family, but there was the guy who wore the man bun and hosted SNL, right? He wasn't so overly consumed by football. And we thought, you know, maybe Brady's career's come to an end. Maybe he'll never win another Super Bowl. They draft Garoppolo, and he just becomes this laser-focused machine. Now Garoppolo's gone. Here he is not caring anymore. And you can go back and say maybe they should have drafted a quarterback. I don't know what the hell Danny Etling's doing on this roster, and I've touched on that. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again. But here we go. It's like it was before Garoppolo. I didn't think we'd see this. I did not think this was going to be the case, but Garoppolo out, and Brady doesn't care anymore.
And you could look at it that way. You could look at it as, I don't care. That's, you know, it's one way to look at it, but I think it's more the context of the entire situation since, you know, the rift between him, Kraft, and Belichick, trading Garoppolo, them having to choose between the two. I think it's more related to that than it is Brady being complacent or not caring as
much. Well, can't those two things be related?
Oh, sure.
Right?
I guess, yeah.
No, and I am saying it goes back to that, but he looks at the way that whole situation went, looks at it and says, oh, this is my team now. I run this organization. I can do what I want
that.
Without consequence. You don't think so?
I think it's, I don't like Bill Belichick. I'm going to stick it to him. And I know that this is driving the media crazy. I know that this is making his life harder, but guess what? This is what you get for stealing a Super Bowl away from me, for benching our best cornerback because you didn't like him. And it's something that's been boiling over, and now it's just I'm going my own way. I have the legacy to pull this off, so I'm doing it. I don't necessarily think it's him not caring. I think it's him not liking Bill Belichick.
And no, and I'm starting to think that's part of it too. After the Wickersham article, I said, oh, this is all BS. After, you know, all this and that, and the Guerrero getting kicked out, and the Garoppolo trade, I was the first person to say it's the media trying to come at and crack the Patriots. And the reason I felt comfortable saying that is, with the whole storm going on around them, up until Malcolm Butler, it was business as usual. They gave you no reason to believe any of that stuff was true. Brady skipping OTAs, this report this morning, him not showing up, this is the first evidence to me that, okay, maybe there are some cracks in the foundation. Maybe there is some validity to all of this. I consider the Wickersham story a complete overblown piece of crap. Not, you know, for lack of a better term. I thought it was just disgusting. I thought it was poor journalism. I thought he was wrong. And now I see this and say, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe Brady is kind of sick of Belichick. Do you think, and what would happen right now if Belichick called him and said, get your ass here? He wouldn't go.
If Belichick said that, well, and that's another thing we don't know. What's going on behind the scenes? I don't think they're talking about this. I don't think they've aired anything.
I don't think they're talking, period. I think the whole thing about them two having a meeting with Kraft, I think that's all overblown PR. I don't think that meeting ever happened.
Maybe it did. Maybe they're
not under- the one. Not the one Wickersham talked about, but they said they were going to have a meeting in the offseason.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm talking about that meeting. Yeah.
I don't think that meeting ever happened. Maybe there was an email chain that was just like, both of you calm down.
You don't think they ever met to just clear the air? Not once?
I don't think they had a... I don't think there was any kind of powwow, come to Jesus meeting, any of that. Maybe the three of them were in the same room, and they just kind of sat there for 10 minutes. Maybe Kraft yelled, maybe Belichick yelled, maybe Brady yelled, and they left. But I don't think there was an ever-concerted effort to fix it, because if there was, I think part of it being fixed would be Brady showing up to OTAs as a sign of goodwill.
But maybe one of the things that was discussed is, listen, I've got a wife who's been badgering me, who is also a professional who finds time for the kids, who wants me to find time for the kids. I have a family. I need to be there.
Well, isn't that Brady controlling things? Because that's never how it's been done before. Football first. Football ahead of family. Belichick puts football ahead of his family, too. People don't talk about that as much.
His kids are grown, though. I think there is a difference there. I also think... regardless of what what's actually happening, this could be the fault of Belichick and Kraft and how they're handling this in public with their PR. It's bad optics. You can't deny that. And the fact that this keeps going on without it really being officially addressed, because it hasn't been.
Nope.
That's not a good sign. So yeah, I'm saying maybe they met. Maybe they did this. Maybe they know they're on the same page. They're probably not, because if they were, we wouldn't be speculating this stuff. They'd probably put it to rest, put it to bed. But they haven't done that. They haven't done that. And right now, Tom Brady's not going to be at OTAs. And from what it seems like, him and Belichick are as far apart as we've ever seen. And yeah, it's just a really bad look.
And they could have put it to bed, because there was speculation all winter that Brady wasn't going to show up to OTAs. And think about it. Brady shows up today. What's the headline? Oh, all the critics are wrong. The national media is wrong. Look at Brady showing up to OTAs. It's business as usual in Foxborough. Everybody's on the same page. They could have put it all to bed today. And don't think they don't know that. Brady knows what he's doing by not going to OTAs. And he could have, like he did with the workouts a couple weeks ago, right? He made sure everybody knew he was working a charity event overseas, and that, you know, he had this prior commitment and he couldn't be there. We haven't heard anything from Brady. As far as I know, when we're recording this at 2 o'clock on Monday, Brady hasn't said he's doing anything for charity. He hasn't said anything about, you know, official about being with his family. I think there are reports that they're on a beach somewhere in the Caribbean. But he hasn't commented on it. And that's uncharacteristic. This whole thing is uncharacteristic. And they both know that they could have put all this to bed if he showed up to OTAs today.
Or at the very least addressed it.
Right. Or said, I'm doing something for charity or this, that, whatever.
Yeah. The optics are horrible. And something must be lingering from last year. I think that's undeniable at this point, especially when you factor in the Amendola's, what he said, the Gronkowski stuff, how the Malcolm Butler thing was never addressed. It's the boiling point for this Patriots team and for these, you know, longtime Patriots. And right now, because of all that, we're speculating that the reason Brady is not there is, again, because he's not getting along with Belichick. I don't know how they get past this without completely addressing it. And I think the one thing that needs to be, that can't be overstated, and this is beyond the rift between the two, it's the fact that they have done a horrible job of managing this situation, which also makes you think Belichick maybe, again, and we brought this up before, maybe lost control of that locker room.
Oh, no, I said it after the Super Bowl. That's going to be the theme this whole season. How does he do what he did in the Super Bowl and then look a player in the eye and tell him to do something and expect the player's going to do it?
And
Malcolm Butler did everything. Everything Bill Belichick wants.
Absolutely. And the first 4 weeks of the season, we've seen it with this Patriots team. They always start off slow.
They can't do that this year.
Will they get out of it is the question if they do start off slow again. And it seems like with all these problems with the media scrutiny, it's going to be very difficult.
Now, it's clearly going to be a very fun training camp.
Absolutely.
With the Patriots. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks for listening to the show. If you want to check out past episodes, at Calling It Podcast on Twitter. Give us a follow. You can check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Next week will either be, how about this, Lovelace? Next week could potentially be Celtics NBA Finals preview. Or Celtics, you know, end of season thoughts.
Season recap.
Game 7, if it gets there, scheduled for Sunday. So this is our last show before the NBA Finals begin. A lot of basketball to be played between now and then. A lot of basketball to be played. So check us out. Make sure to check us out again next week. We will talk to you then. Bye.